Probably won't be sideline. I'll probably have to do a game that I'm just writing on.
I just hope he's okay. Man. Do you think he's okay? Is White okay?
Of course not. I mean, I don't think he's any worse.
A loaded question.
I don't think he's any worse than he was last week. But I mean, anyone who goes full body paint.
I mean, I feel like the thing that happened to the Tin Man in the original Wizard of Oz, where he got like iron poisoning because of all of like the paint he used. Oh. I just want to make sure that
did that actually happen?
Allegedly, not to retroactively indict.
I have a feeling that White is not using body paint. He just went to the exterior paint. Corona presenting debatable. Shout out to Corona.
Can't be good for his eczema. That's all I'm saying. Can't possibly. Oh, gosh.
You never know until you find out. And hello, welcome to Debatable, a very fake but very live television show where we are sponsored by Corona. And
what
that's
do you mean?
Gutierrez.
Oh, wow, you can see my hands.
That's Dominique Foxworth.
Oh, no, see? Real.
Okay,
so real.
Stop,
look how real
stop exposing the limits of our production budget as I read you a menu card that has the NBA Finals on it. We'll talk about that. It has LeBron on it because we just leave that space there always. It's just always going to be
always.
LeBron in that corner. And then Lamar Jackson and Davante Adams. We have real sports topics to talk about, Alabaster.
Oh,
I hope your appetite has been whetted by my read of your menu.
Guys, I am hungry for some sports, but I am also jacked up because tonight is essentially moving day for the NBA Finals. We're going to find out tonight if the Celtics have the guts. And what I want to ask
you
about
Phil Mickelson?
No, I want to ask you about this. Is tonight feels like a must win for the Warriors because they're the ones down 2-1? But does it also feel like a must win for the Celtics?
My gosh. Are we going to answer the question before we break down the ESPN production strategy that we just all experience in live action?
We are going to talk about how Alabaster, to Izzy's point, absolutely looked like the Phil Mickelson wide-eyed leather jacket sort of like mania that he resembled at that press conference the other day. Yeah, just real itchy in places. Just real. I love the finals, man.
Oh, man. We got enough good stuff that you don't got to break out must win. Like, I feel like must win is only used when you're trying to sell something that doesn't need to be sold. Like, I'm actually excited about this game. And
same.
People have given up 3-1 deficits before. I believe that some people who are on that court are aware of it. So, no, it's not a must win for either team. But it is a big game, and it's going to be a fun game. And make sure White is there.
All right, can I itch a little bit? Izzy, can I itch a little bit here? Because it feels
Please.
More must. I do feel like this is a must win for the Warriors.
Oh,
I do feel that. I do feel that, Dominique. I will huff the paint that Alabaster is throwing at us and say that.
It's not a must win for them. They aren't good enough to win this series, in my view. They're going to lose tonight. And they might win another
home
game.
So you're saying it's not even a must win because the word must implies that they have a possibility of winning, which is an even hotter take than I realized.
I don't think – like I'm willing to step out on this limb because we all see it. We just are scared to like honestly evaluate the Warriors because of their history. But there's no way that anyone who's watched these three games can come away feeling like the Warriors have the depth, the talent, the size, or the athleticism to compare with the Celtics. The reason why any of these games are any fun at all is because they got Steph Curry, and that man be cooking on occasion, not in the fourth quarters, but he be cooking 1 through 3 enough to make us
cooking,
be like...
Is he cooking rocks?
Yes, he be cooking rocks, baking soda, Pyrex pants, all that. He has given us everything we need to make us enjoy this, but I just don't see it lasting through this, and Draymond Green is going to get a lot of attention. But Draymond Green, he can't do things that he can't do. He was a great piece when he was a piece.
But you know what he will
do. Now they're trying to make him a star.
You know what he will do.
He can't do that.
You know what he will do, and you know what he's going to give us.
Pod. You're going to get his pod.
We're going to get those podcasts. All right, Izzy is patiently waiting, and his eyes
I know Charlie's all jacked up, but simmer down. I got to get in here first. Basically, that's what you're expecting from Draymond, right? Is a Draymond type of game. But what exactly does that mean? Because game two, it just showed that means he's just going to run over people and not get any fouls called against him. So basically, The Celtics' strategy to take Draymond out of the game is to hope that the referees just call it normally. Just call a normal game, he'll probably be in foul trouble within 3 minutes. I'm dead serious there. This seems like a series where it's kind of settling in, where the Celtics are kind of the bullies, bigger, badder in every sense of the way. And the only reason the Warriors have a real shot, because they're so small and because they can't defend at the rim, is Steph Curry. It's not Klay, because you can hope for one game out of Klay, but you can't really hope for that much. It's got to be Steph giving you more and more and more. And when his foot is maybe not 100%, I don't know if that's possible. So, you know, the Celtics could shoot themselves out of, you know, a dominant game four, but I'm predicting a dominant game four from
Izzy, could you just sit up a little bit to show the eyeballs on your shirt? Because I feel like...
Sure, no problem.
It's like what Alabaster must look like right now as he is dying to interject. So, Alabaster, what do you want?
I've got so many storylines to talk about, but since we're on Draymond Green, we'll start there. And Izzy, I actually wonder, what's the matchup with Draymond that interests you the most? Because I think he's got the game within the game within the game within the game within the game. I think he has four opponents. He's got the Celtics. He's got the Celtics crowd, which we didn't really discuss enough. Like, that was going on, and that has been like a back and forth, which has been fascinating, of codes maybe being broken, lines maybe being crossed.
You
want
to talk about
the refs and then the
Warriors offense. Refs, Warriors offense. Got it. Okay. Yeah, that's a lot. No, the game. All right. What do you make of the game? The Russian nesting doll of games that Alabaster has.
The one that is actually a grenade is probably the refs. I think that's the one where he's going to have to. Like, he's just going to have to play the game, because I don't think he's going to get away with all this stuff, especially in Boston, just like he didn't do in game three. And so it's a matter of, you've got to provide something. And if you, what you're providing is just some fouls and arguing with the officials, you're not doing as much. Whether it be, you know, creating when Steph is getting too much attention, but I think Boston defense has been great, so it's not like it's Draymond's fault there. You know, there are a lot of people saying, if he would take the shots that he used to take and everything else. I don't know if they've been watching Draymond, but his offense is not something that has been steady throughout his career. It actually has fallen off. He's actually less reliable shooting the ball than he was before. So to ask him to try to do more, I don't, offensively anyway, I don't think that's your answer.
No, it's not so much take the shots he used to take. It's don't take the shots that you never were good at taking. Because he has been shooting a lot of threes for reasons that feel like flailing. They feel flaily.
I mean, and maybe he has to flail, because I don't know that they have any other answers. But the reason why I'm so definitive, and I have been since game three, honestly, is because there are no advantages on the other side. And if Draymond, to me, it reminds me of, like, maybe you went back to your high school reunion and, like, the guy who was the star quarterback and was, like, the cool kid and got all the girls. Like, then he hit the real world. And, like, if you can't throw well enough to make it to the NFL, being a star quarterback lands you.
Yeah, your girl will leave you.
Yeah, it lands you in a referee's costume selling sneakers. Like,
oh,
maybe.
Damn.
That's what happened. And then the nerd came back, and all his nerd things have now put him to the point where he is the man. So, like, I feel like Draymond is walking back into the reunion, like, remember me? Remember me? Four touchdowns in one game.
I gotta say,
Jalen Brown is like,
he's Al Bundy.
Okay, but that was 10 years ago. So, like, Draymond, if you're relying on Draymond to be a huge cog in your offense, you're done for, which it seems like they are now hoping that he will, or at least we are proposing the idea that maybe he has to step up there. But aside from that, you're done before that, because Jaylen Brown was waving off the screens in the first damn quarter, time after time, like, nah, I got exactly who I want, the defensive stopper that you guys are rolling out here. You switched him on to me in game two and thought that was a difference maker. Everyone, excuse me. No, don't switch with Steph. Watch out. Give me that. And then he scored every time he wanted to.
He unscrewed a bottle of barbecue sauce, draped it on Draymond's body, and then just did whatever he wanted, which is...
And that wasn't even team strategy. That was getting him back for the pulling of the shorts down and the incident that they had earlier. That was Jaylen Brown asserting himself.
That's even more, like, pronounced to me, the power that they have, is because Draymond, we argue that Draymond's value, part of his value is psychic. Like, it's psychological. And if that, you don't even got that? They ain't even scared of you're crazy, then you better hit a three. Because, I mean, something. You better get thrown out so that after this you can say no one's ever beat us whole. You better think of something else.
I just want to be offended on behalf of Paul Pierce, because no one embodies the metaphor that Dominique just outlined. The guy who has graduated a long time ago but walks around like he is the coolest kid and realizes he is not the coolest kid and is possibly like blackout drunk by the second half. That was literally Paul Pierce. But Alabaster, what do you want to say about this?
I want to support my teammate, my beloved teammate Dominique Foxworth, and have a stat that backs up the eyes that we are using to view this Draymond Green deterioration. And that's a stat that comes from Kevin O'Connor. And that is, when Draymond Green is the primary defender, teams are scoring on him at a higher rate than they have since 2013-2014. So his, and that was before he was star Draymond Green. That's before the first run of the Warriors dynasty. So it backs it up. He's bluster, he's bravado, but on both ends, he hasn't been good. And that's significant. But I want to ask you one follow-up, Dominique. Do you have the guts that we hope the Celtics have here to say Celtics in five? Are you ready to end it in the next two games? Can we push you to that line?
Okay, so Dominique is thinking, I'm going to reiterate that I have Warriors in seven. I'm not budging because why the hell would I back off my take that's still alive? But Dominique is trying to figure out, does he put the pedal to the take metal here?
I saw a finger from Izzy. He has something to say while I still soak
Izzy,
this
what's
up.
Your, what's your prediction?
I mean, that was just
here.
Me voting that I'd be willing to go Celtics in five. I mean, I had Celtics
you
in six.
Undercut me?
I still think it's going to be Celtics in six, mostly because they want
Dominique,
to
you waited way
celebrate
too long.
At home.
Izzy came in and seized the take that you were contemplating.
Hey, that's what I get.
Too reasonable.
That's what I get for being the star quarterback in high school. And I thought I could just mosey on in and get the girl or guy, whatever I wanted to. And Izzy slipped right under there. Like, no, that's mine.
Yeah.
Damn.
I got.
Can
I got.
Continue
Celtics
with your take.
Four.
I'll show you what I took from you.
Celtics in four. Sweet. They're gonna reevaluate game two, and they're gonna realize, no, actually, this was illegal. For
I don't know what Izzy said
to do with.
Before he left. He said he was gonna show us something, but
getting a new shirt.
He's gone. I don't know. It should be exciting. You can change in front of the camera, Izzy. Don't act like that's not.
I feel like that's
doing.
Better for no, it's no. Better for our token count. Oh, by the way, if you're out there, we do things for tokens. There should be a list somewhere on the side. Yeah, you give us.
This
certain
is just
number,
me stealing your chain. Is all that was.
Oh, wow.
Ooh,
damn.
Miami. You just got so Miami on us.
Snatched. He went off screen, went to Washington, D.C. / the D.C. area, and snatched Dominique's chain.
Hey, don't D.C. area.
That's Celtics in five all across. I don't think you've noticed, but it does.
I live in the city limits, you jerk. Don't D.C. area
me. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for giving you voting rights.
No, I love taxation, and I hate representation. Get out of here. I love to pay federal tax without a senator. We have a senator, Eleanor Holmes Norton. She just can't vote. Anyway.
Shout out to Eleanor. Okay, let's keep it moving. Nah,
we're going to do these civics lessons for the rest of the show.
can we talk about a different leader before we move on? Because I do think we got to talk about Ime Udoka here.
Before we get to Ime Udoka, let's talk about D.C. statehood. 51st state. No, I'm just joking.
Yep.
Let's go Ime.
Oh, I was going to say Puerto Rico. We go in Puerto Rico on this too. We folding everything.
All
right.
Yeah, fold them all in. Well done.
I have to do that every time I hit Puerto Rico.
I was laying out for Izzy to make a noise that I assume he had to make contractually when Puerto Rico is brought up. So Ime Udoka, like, we have gotten the myth. And I want to know how much of the myth needs to be busted. Because, Dominique, I guess what I'm most interested in, Izzy, is the motivational aspect of him. Because we've just demeaned and defamed the psychic abilities of Draymond Green. And here we have a coach who's really good, I think, at cursing out his guys and getting them to play better. And I wonder, like,
he's a bit of a badass.
Yeah, like, what are we buying and selling from him?
I mean, what I'm buying is that he was able to establish this level of listen to me at his first year, because guys have to buy in order for you to really get the best out of them. And this was a team that in December they had, you know, seemingly checked out. Like, it's, you know, you got them infighting, saying they got to pass the ball, they're losing. And that's when the players kind of check out and say, well, you know, maybe this coach isn't the guy. And it was the exact opposite. It seemed like he went harder on them and they just listened and it worked. And so now he's got their full respect. And like I said, he's a bit of a badass. He's got that, like, I don't take anything too, like, you can ask him a question and he'll seem like he's trying to intimidate you, when really he's just an intimidating looking dude. And so, yeah, I love everything that he's doing, and just his adjustments in general have been very strong from game to game. But also, yeah, as you mentioned, Steve Bulpet from Boston Herald tweeted out that somebody said he was in the huddle and said, you guys are playing like a bunch of assholes. And so then they weren't. That's coaching.
I mean, most of the people in the NBA know how to play basketball. So you're right. There's not much incentive that they need or instruction that they need. They just need a little mirror in their face. I think so. There's so many variables in just about everything. But we like to boil them down to one easy-to-tell story, and I don't want to get in the way of that. I would like to talk about Ime Udoka as a master motivator. I don't want to talk about any other potential improvements or developments or injuries or luck or health or any of the other things that came into play. I want to talk about Ime Udoka properly deploys F-bombs. That's why they're good. He knows when the right time is to hit somebody with a good F-bomb, and I'm sure that at least for me, and I believe this to be true for most people, the messenger matters so much more than the message. Mm. So if Michael Jordan comes and tells me something about my shooting form, I'm be like, all right, maybe I should take that into account. If Pablo is like, hey, tucking your elbow, I'm a wide net thing. I'm like, oh, clearly
even
I'm doing it all
wrong. Even
though we
played 21, a game of 21 to 21, 21.
So wait,
21,
is Pablo Brad for, Stevens like, in this situation?
Yes.
Who the Celtics didn't listen to quite as
well,
closely.
Okay, well,
as they
hold
did
on.
To
Let's
Ime
talk
Udoka.
About that, because it does seem like, okay, so the Brad Stevens, why is he going to the president's position? Why is he leaving coaching? This was shocking at the time, and various reasons have been reported. And as I understand it, talking to people around the league, yeah, he was done with coaching. He was tired. He found himself, I think, frustrated by the grind of some of the stuff that Dominique is talking about. And so what he did do, to his credit,
Kyrie Irving, is find
a guy who is so. And yeah, are we building a myth? Are we overselling the
myth?
Maybe.
That's our job.
But man, like, you watch him, you lip read Ime Udoka during a game, and that dude is profane.
Congratulations.
Well, to that point, Pablo, if Brad Stevens is pushing himself to the president's position, which is a phrase that can have so many meanings, then he knows what the players didn't get out of him,
right?
He knows that, hey, maybe they didn't really listen to me on certain points. I need to get somebody that can sort of fill that void and be, you know, that person that they were missing, and seemingly picked the perfect person. So I'm not saying that every coach that gets fired should just boot himself up to the president's spot and say, hey, let me pick the next coach. But I think he should get a lot of credit for doing that, because, again, he knew that group of players probably better than anyone.
I mean, it's outstanding upward failing. Like, you failed yourself to a higher
find your niche,
more stable position. But the point I was making earlier is that we don't know. While we're focused on the way that he cusses his players out on the court in the biggest games, we love that. We don't know what was done in the preseason or prior to even joining this team. Because my point about, like, it matters the message, like, not everybody can say that to you and you respond the way that they respond. He did something to gain their trust, credibility, or for them to believe that he actually cares about him. Like, I've been coached by a lot of people, and I don't believe many of them give a damn about
me. Are you saying, Dominique, that if you were to take a transcript of the things that Ray Lewis has said to you in a locker room, and you were to ask me to read it, I would not have the credibility to be as persuasive?
I would say possibly. And I think, I mean, Ray's an interesting example, because when I joined that team, he had a way of making everyone feel like he genuinely gave a damn about you. And that mattered to me and to anyone on the team more than, like, his ability mattered, or his credentials mattered, because he wasn't the player that he was in his prime. But the idea that what happens off the floor, you actually give a damn, like, that makes me want to listen to you. If I feel like I'm a cog in a machine and you don't actually care about me, yes, hit me with an F-bomb is going to have the opposite effect than what you want it to have.
That is the Udonis Haslam way of leadership.
God. Oh, God. Let's move on. All right. Thank you. Thank you for punctuating that, Izzy.
If there's one way to get things moving along, it is to mention the Miami Heat. I've already learned that.
Let's move on to LeBron. And I got to ask you guys.
During his Heat days or no?
No. Oh, different heat. It's a dry heat.
I'm going to take this thing off. It's heavy.
It's a very dry heat. But, okay, LeBron went on the shop and said he wants to own an NBA team. That makes sense. He's a billionaire. He wants to own the NBA team in Vegas if they expand there. And my question to you all, if LeBron wants to own an NBA team in La Vegas, does it feel like a done deal that the NBA will expand to Vegas?
Yeah, and I say that before LeBron even said this, honestly, because, I mean, look, the Broncos, what were they just sold for? $4.6 billion-ish, right? Like the highest price ever paid for a franchise. The NBA is going to expand. Adam Silver has said they want to expand. There is money on the table, right? And there's seemingly, we can debate at a later date, it's a less interesting discussion probably, like the talent dilution of expansion, what happens. But yes, Adam Silver said last week at some point, quote, this league invariably will expand, but it's not at this moment that we are discussing it, which means that he is discussing it and then saying we're not going to discuss it. So we know that there is interest. And so to me, the question is honestly more interesting about, like, is LeBron just going to be the guy to automatically own it or own a share of it? And how does that look? Because he's still playing. LeBron has said he wants to do five different, like, talk about games within games within games. He said he wants to play with Bronny. He said he wants to accomplish all these things. He's become a billionaire. He said he wants to own a team. Like, he can't do the team ownership part till the other stuff is done. And I think it's going to be very clever to see him position himself to own a share before he can legally own a share.
Yeah, maybe that timeline ends up working out for him then, right? If he's going to play three or four more years and Adam Silver's saying, hey, we're going to look at it, not right now, but very soon, it could match up. I get a little nervous about that sometimes because, you know, Michael Jordan owns a team that hasn't done anything of any significance. And, you know, over, and it depends on what his level of input on the team is, because I doubt LeBron can be a hands-off owner. Especially if it's a new team, when he's going to set the reputation right off the bat. And so, you know, we've seen him over the years, you know, make, I don't know if it's like questionable implications or just questionable trade suggestions.
Why are we beating
But I just don't think
here?
He's, I just yeah. don't think he'd be very good at a president of basketball ops or anybody that's making those decisions.
Well, I
Sorry.
Mean, I think compared to Jordan, if you go style of play wise, I think LeBron has a style of play that would suggest he'd be much better at running an organization and a team than Michael Jordan. While doing it while playing is a whole nother ball of wax, but yeah, he'll be able to, I think we all agree that if he wants the team, he's probably going to get the team. That will probably take an impact on like whatever fees you have to pay, because normally if you're joining a league, you have to buy your way in. So are they going to like artificially reduce or artificially, I guess it wouldn't be artificial. They just bring in enough investors to boost the price up to where it needs to be for LeBron to get in. But this always brings to mind like my union experience and like how difficult it is to run a sports union. But running the basketball union has to be the hardest out of any other sport. Because like LeBron is much more similar to like Steve Ballmer than he is to like Derek White. So the idea that you are in negotiations.
Well, in one way,
there.
In one
oh, yeah,
way,
I
Derek White and LeBron are very similar. And
it.
It's mostly the part. On
I got
head.
It. But yeah, I know yeah. no one wants to do like sports business talk, but it just.
No, do it. I want to.
Always,
so Dominique.
It's always in my head.
You were an executive with the NBA Players Association.
Right.
This is not an abstract yeah. concept to you. So no, nerd out on this. I want to know.
No, I mean, in those meetings, it was impressive how like benevolent, frankly, LeBron was in those conversations, because he was very like focused on getting lifetime health care for the players. And I was like, this is really cool, but you actually don't belong in here, because like the shit you're concerned about. Like back then, I'm sure he was already looking at Michael Jordan and already thinking about like how much or how he's going to get a team, while the rest of those guys are thinking about like, how are we going to get these league minimums up? And while even some other stars who aren't on LeBron's level may be more opposed to like max salaries than somebody like LeBron is, because LeBron's like, all right, I don't care. Give me 40, give me 30, give me 50. It don't matter, because I'm making 300 off the court and I'm going to own a team when it's over. So like it's just an interesting dynamic, because the point of a union is you want a bunch of like similar people together, because none of them has that much power individually, and together we will have power. He ain't like nobody. Like he is, and I'm not joking,
right.
He's much more like his experience and his value to the league is much closer to him being a governor than it is to him being a player. And it's amazing to me that he's managed to like be, he was like a vice president at one point,
yeah.
and heavily involved in the union.
But what you're describing, Izzy, it's funny, right? Like what Dominique is describing is that LeBron was a good union executive because he was so rich and so powerful beyond the union that he didn't care in the way that a normal union executive player.
So, like, I'm sorry to keep going on this, but like, I remember us being in meetings with the teams, and we're like trying to rally the troops to get ready for a CBA fight around all these like workplace issues, and presumably LeBron's people are in direct contact with Adam Silver talking about how he gonna get a franchise at some point. Like, the hell are we doing here? That's why I'm on TV now.
Here's the one thing that I will say about this that is just makes me very happy, and it's in stark contrast to the NFL, is just the idea of former players going into ownership in their own league, and like primary ownership in the case of Jordan and potentially in the case of LeBron James here, because it's not only a racial diversity thing, it's not only sort of mixing up, you know, like I said, the top of the top, but it's just investing in your own league. You know, you as a people, like, I know what Dwayne Wade's all about as a human being, and if he's going to be an ownership group and be in this little bubble of a little ring of people, I know what he stands about as a human being, and I know he wants what's best for the NBA. And those two things are pretty much all you can ask for people that are in charge of a league. So the more LeBron James is, it's probably going to inspire more, you know, athletes to really get their money right. I mean, he might be a multi-billionaire by the time he finally owns a team.
I don't know, Izzy. I prefer my owners to be soulless worms that just eat away at the soul of sports. But Alabaster is asking.
Speaking of which, Alabaster,
soulless worms.
Thank you. Yes. As I'm a termite biting holes through the format of this show. So I came to this segment wanting to make a bunch of jokes about LeGM and how he was going to trade everyone away multiple times a year, but. Dominique, I'm taking it. I'm biting on this worm, and I have a question for you. And I want you to have the last word on this before we move on. Is like, is there something to your point? He was an NBAPA executive. He has made a lot of his career on standing up for players in this league. He's been very forthright in saying, I'm going to take a max salary until I retire because players deserve to have that salary they've earned. And if I take less, you know, that sets a bad precedent. When he becomes an owner, is there a conflict there of him owning a team and being a part of this club of, presumably when they expand, 32 other billionaires who sort of want to stiff the players and make as much profit as possible, with him being X player, I've stood up for X, Y, and Z. Can those two coexist? Can he do both as effectively as possible?
No. Like, you can't. There won't be a conflict there because he won't still be involved. Like, if you want to say there's a conflict, the conflict is now. Or at least the appearance of the conflict is just as bad as the conflict. That's been his, for at least half of his career, when we realized he was going to be an all-time great, probably more than that, and that he realized that he's going to be connected to this league in bigger ways than anyone else has. So it's different when, like, this is my only option. I'm going to play basketball. This is all the money I'm going to make. It's likely that I'd be willing to sacrifice more to get a bigger piece of the pie right now. Whereas someone in the position as LeBron is like, whatever. We don't got to sacrifice that much. I'm going to be here forever. I'm going to buy a team from them at some point. So, like, I don't think there's any conflict afterwards. The conflict, if there is one, is now. And to be clear, like I mentioned, the one time when LeBron James yelled at me was because we were talking about funding a insurance for lifetime health care for players. And I was saying, like, the PA and the players should not pay for that. We should fight for that to make the owners pay. And LeBron was like, nah, don't matter who pays for it. They are getting lifetime health care. And, like, that's a level of, like, sacrifice that I guess you could argue it wasn't coming out of his pocket or it wasn't going to impact if he didn't care. But, like, it was a commitment to active and former players that was impressive.
Coming from LeBron, somebody who is sort of underpaid his entire career, and everybody talks about it, if he was actually getting his value, and somebody who owns a piece of an EPL team, shouldn't he just ask for no salary cap? I know nobody else will go for that, no other owners, but wouldn't he be the proponent of no salary cap?
No, not once he owns a team.
Because he can't play both
sides. That's the Michael Jordan thing. Michael, I mean, it's so funny to look at Michael Jordan's tenure. There's a reason why he is, the incentives, right? The incentives to be the guy who is restricting spending, restricting the ability for you to mess up picks. Michael Jordan's in favor of like not getting high school players, right, out of college. I mean, into the draft, right out of school. But yeah, last note, I'm just glad Dominique and J.R. Smith have something in common.
He didn't yell at J.R. He just played with him.
The North Carolina golfer. I remember.
J.R. Smith, he plays golf at NC A&T.
Let's move on, and this is a pivot. I got some NFL stuff for you for the back half of the show.
Ooh.
And it's June, then it's July, then it's August. My football senses are tingling. And guys, there's a mystery going on in the NFL. And that mystery is what is going on with Lamar Jackson's contract. This is a mega star, a unanimous MVP, a franchise savior for the Baltimore Ravens. And he doesn't have the quarterback mega deal that he deserves. There's issues with his maybe representing himself. There's issues with maybe the team having too much leverage. But I want to know from you guys, what are the chances Lamar Jackson gets the mega deal he wants before this season, his final season on his rookie deal?
So I want to know what Lamar Jackson is. If you listen to the smart people who criticize him, if there are smart people who criticize him, I don't want to be too presumptive here. What are they criticizing him for? Is it the representing himself thing? What is the strategy that he is seemingly getting wrong here? I want to understand that better.
That we don't know what he's asking for.
Yeah.
We don't know what, is it just that it's money? Is it that he's upset that he, you know, you get players traded and he wants to go elsewhere? It seems like my guess, if we're all guessing here, which is all what we're doing, is that the Deshaun Watson contract has thrown a wrench into a lot of these conversations, and he wants more than that. If it's, what, $230 million and every penny guaranteed, okay, I'm worth more than that. I've got an MVP, and I don't have that, you know, history of
sexual misconduct. Whatever. Yeah.
Yes.
I think
66.
It's, yeah, it's, this is a complicated one to talk about because Lamar isn't talking about it. And we're using like past precedent to make assumptions that have not been made. And it's clear that like the executives or like the Ravens are leaking stuff to their media people, which is fine, but Lamar's not doing the same. So like words are being used like he's boycotting OTAs. Them things is voluntary. You can't boycott, like a boycott is connected with a cause. At no point has he come out and said, I want a new contract, so I'm not coming to OTAs. Maybe it's voluntary. I don't want to come to OTAs. Like, he hasn't said anything like that. We're all assuming, or I mean, we know that he wants a new contract. We all assume that if the Ravens offered him a good contract, he would take it. But the Ravens keep saying, we offered him good contracts, and he won't take it. But they also aren't saying what the contracts are that he offered him.
Right.
So, like, they're setting it up in such a way that it looks like Lamar Jackson is a maniac. Like, what are you doing? You don't want to talk to him. But I'm going to go ahead and assume that he's not and that there's more to this that we don't understand. And he probably is insured and is not as stressed out as we all are about him getting injured.
So is the problem then that he doesn't have, because we're talking about the realpolitik of this as much as we are talking about the actual decision, because we don't know the actual decision that he wants to make. But we're talking about how the backroom political dealings are actually kind of the story here, right? The idea that he does not have an agent, so he's not leaking. Yeah. Is that part of the problem? Does he need to leak to someone? Does he need, is that the reason to get an agent?
Well,
right?
I mean, if you want this, no, like there is really no benefit to either side leaking. The point of leaking is to create more pressure on your opposition. Lamar doesn't seem to be under pressure. The Ravens want their fans to know that they're trying, and they want Lamar to feel the pressure to sign whatever deal is out there. And Lamar's like, I don't care. You're not pressuring me. You're not going to force me to do anything I don't want to do. And
what's
I'm not
right
going to
make, him to say?
I'm not going to try to make you guys look silly or make you look greedy. I'm just not going to show up to OTAs for whatever reason. And then I'll come out and I'll give you MVP caliber football 35%.
And it kind of just what it's creating, this whirlwind that he hasn't even taken part in yet, just kind of goes to show you that, like, hey, look, life without me, or when I'm not directly involved, or when you don't know what's in my head, it can be pretty chaotic over there. I'm probably deserving of this. And I do think there's no benefit to him coming out and saying, hey, I want the contract Deshaun Watson got, because then you're just knocking that guy when the rest of the world can do that for you. So you're probably, again, like you're saying, Dominique, better off not saying a thing and let them get all in a tizzy while you just calmly, you know, react to whatever offers they get.
I mean, Steve Bisciotti, the owner of the team, did, like, openly complain about Deshaun Watson's like unlimited completely guaranteed salary. So my guess is that the Ravens know the obvious thing, that if they offer him Deshaun Watson's salary plus $1, he'll sign it.
Yes. And by the way, guarantees for a guy in Lamar Jackson who likes to run, or maybe is going to be running more than other quarterbacks,
critical,
get those guarantees. Yeah, that would factor in. And so Dominique gave us 35%. Dominique, I'm doing the math here. Dominique has a cat named Lamar, so I can't go nearly as optimistic as that. He's already carrying water. So I'm going to go.
If my son
I'm
was
go
here, then
17.5%.
I mean, the fact that I had, the fact that Lamar Jackson is such a good player that a 9-year-old boy would name his son Lamar is all the more reason. Or name his
9-year-old boy. Name
9-year-old boy would name
that
his
is an
cat.
Active 9-year-old.
Hey, we are advanced.
we have really anthropomorphized this cat.
I'm actually a lot more optimistic. I think it's double what Fox does. I think it's 70%. I think this is not quite a Zion Williamson situation, right? Because it's not like we're talking about a current injury. We're talking about projecting injury with Lamar. No, I think he's absolutely critical. I don't think they can mess with him at all before he starts asking out. I think they can.
I think you're just caught up in the realpolitik of the situation. Get yourself.
I am.
Separate yourself.
It's a lovely cocktail, right?
From the realpolitik.
That's what sounds like.
Did you go to a business school attached to an actually good college?
Realpolitik. Like, is that a strip club that James Harden goes to?
Serve it at Real Madrid game.
That is, it is realpolitik.
There it is.
Like, all right, guys, got one more quick hitter for you. And I got a conditional statement for you to fill out because we heard from Davante Adams, who gave that spicy nugget. He gave a spicy nugget saying that the Packers actually offered him more money than the Raiders. And so my question, if the Packers did offer Davante more money than the Raiders, then blank.
If the Packers offered Davante Adams more money than the Raiders, then there is no way I am not making this about Aaron Rodgers. I am sorry. We're all going there.
No, we're not. I'm not.
Okay, where are you going?
Davante Adams. I'm going to Vegas. I'm just saying it's a better place to live than Green Bay, Wisconsin. Now you go.
Davante Adams told us, right? Are we saying that he's a liar? He said he wants to be closer to his family. Like, and he said he's no longer in a position like in his first or second year where he has to like fight for or take whatever is out there. Like, it's about like his quality of life, which I respect and appreciate. So good for him. It's not like there's no mystery here. If you want to cook up something, there's no reason to believe he loved Aaron Rodgers. Like, I would
think about cooking up something. Actually, I do think that there's something to the Aaron Rodgers situation where last year, a bit of a surprise, right? Like, obviously, MVP, all that stuff, took him, you know, into the playoffs, whatever. But a bit of a surprise. Like, you don't really know where this Aaron Rodgers story is going. And to stay there as the top receiver, that's the main reason. That is the number one reason. You've got one of the best, if not the best quarterback. He's going to get you the ball a ton of times. If it's not going to guarantee me a Super Bowl, let me go live next to my family in Vegas with a less controversial quarterback and just do my thing over there. I think that's pretty easy, even if it was just a little bit less money, because you probably have more endorsement opportunities if you're in, you know, Vegas.
But speaking of the quarterback controversy here, Alabaster helpfully puts down this quote, which I had not seen before, which is amazing.
This is called
Davante
a lie.
Adams comparing the skill sets of Rodgers
Preserve the podcast audience from this lie. Like, the people on Twitter, they can read this foolishness.
How dare
you? The podcast audience deserves not to read this foolishness.
So to recap what just happened in the last 2 minutes, Dominique went from accusing me of calling Davante Adams a liar to now officially calling Davante Adams a liar. Davante Adams did say this, quote, "As far as talent and ability, comparing Rodgers and Derek Carr, it's really similar, comma, if I'm keeping it real."
Okay.
End quote. So are you saying that the "if I'm keeping it real" is actually that's the out he has? Because he's not saying that he is keeping it real. He's saying, hypothetically, if I were to keep it real, I might say this, but I'm not even keeping it real. So none of this actually counts.
You, sir, are a master politician, because I didn't even catch that. You're right.
That real
that's what
politique.
He's doing. I felt like
"if" is doing a lot of work.
He is putting a lot of work on the "if". I felt like I had to call him a liar, because the other things that I had to call him if he actually said this were more insulting. But you're right. I just have to call him savvy. That is a hell of an effective use of "if". because they are not the same. They are not the same.
People continue to use if as if it's a statement of what they're doing as opposed to a theory as to what might happen if they were a different person. And yeah, Derek Carr goes on to say, quote, yeah, it's been fun to have my friend back, which is sweet, Derek. You and your
they might not be really close.
In your arm, yep.
It might not be really close as far as, you know, Devontae's trying to make it sound, but in terms of like a talented offensive roster, isn't this the most talented offensive roster Devontae's been on? Because they weren't disloaded in Green Bay.
Oh man, I'm sorry, I'm still stuck on the if. I was assuming that it was like if you're with someone new and that new person, you're like, hey, do I have bigger feet than your previous relationship? Damn. I mean, if I'm keeping it real, biggest shoes I ever seen.
Yeah, wow.
I knew I could pull Alabaster out with that one.
Well, no. Actually, I got hooked by Izzy's take of this Raiders team being the most talented offense that Devontae's played on. If I'm keeping it real, any offense with Aaron Rodgers is much more talented than the team with Derek Carr playing.
But are you keeping it real? Nobody really knows.
Hold on. We could also go the other ways, like say he is keeping it real and saying that they are similar in the grand scheme of the world. Like Derek Carr is much closer to Aaron Rodgers than Pablo is to Aaron Rodgers.
No. He specifically said talent and ability.
Yeah,
that had to be football talent.
No, but compared to like, you know, why even stop at humans? Why don't we go to if Aaron Rodgers and a chair, very dissimilar. Aaron Rodgers and Derek Carr, relatively,
if I'm keeping it real,
extremely similar.
If I'm keeping it real, there's only a few genes off. There's just a couple chromosomes or molecules. I don't know science. Hey, real.
I don't either. Hey, that was debatable. Brought to you by Corona, which, if we're keeping it real, you fill in the rest.
And we are keeping it real. It's delicious.
And we are legitimately keeping it real. Yes. Take out that if. We are.
I'm keeping it Israel. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye. Have a good weekend this time for real.
Yeah.
Have a good weekend yesterday. And
you did.
It was Thursday.
I started to have a good weekend, but then I stopped keeping it real.
I'm sorry.